Hey, you got the morning show here on Raglan Community Radio. That's Lime Cordial with Pedestal. And in the studio, I've got John Lawson. Good morning, John.
Kia ora.
The bridge traffic lights. What's the story? What do you got?
Well, there was a lot of surprise last year when they said, oh, we're going to put traffic lights on the single lane bridge.
Well, they're going to do a pilot or an experiment, weren't they?
Yes. Yeah. And now they're saying engagement with the community during the pre-engagement phase, noting that there is no subsidy for this project. So they're saying they haven't got any money for it, and they need to talk to Raglan before they do anything. So maybe they've learnt something from last time.
Well, they will have forgotten last time because it'll be all new staff by now. But yeah. Maybe...
By way of background, probably ought to explain this is what they're looking at for the long-term plan coming up starting July next year.
And they've started having, Lisa says they've started having workshops on this. So so this is the council spending plan. This one's going to be really hard for them to do, I think, because there's not going to be enough money to do all the things that definitely need to happen.
Probably.
Yeah, that would be the case. So the reason we're talking, something happened with the traffic lights in the past. They tried some traffic lights one summer and somebody threw them in the water. They were the ones that had no sensor, so it was just timed. So people got frustrated just sitting at the bridge while nothing happened. But this is interesting because I read the engineer's explanation for this, and I get that it makes sense for them. It means they can extend the life of the bridge before they have to double lane it. So financially, they're putting off a cost and they don't have to spend it now. But... that's this kind of standard thing for bridges. We're quite good at like taking turns with our bridge here anyway.
Because the problem is that lots of development's happening at Rangitahi and elsewhere.
Yeah.
So there's more traffic on that bridge than there used to be. But yeah, most people seem quite happy with it and don't see a problem except maybe at peak weekends.
Yeah, which is becoming increasingly a problem. But it's only not for very long periods of time, and it's not even every day during peak periods.
Yeah, but at least it's reassuring council realise they need to engage with us before they do anything, so we'll probably hear more about this.
Yeah, there'll be a pretty violent response, I suspect, which doesn't speak well of our community, but people get angry about it.
They also seem to be moving ahead with moving the rating costs for buses from district council to regional council. So
who's having they?
Workshop. Well, they being our district council. Talking to our regional council about it. Apparently they've booked a meeting for the 8th of October. So
hold on, so the ratings will come through the district council, but is it still going to be run by the regional council?
Well, no, it'll be rated and run by the regional council, so that will take the district council out of that equation.
I remember Roger Gallagher, who was our community board chairperson a little while ago, saying that the system for funding buses couldn't be more complicated. They couldn't have devised a system more inclined to fail than the one that we had, which because Waka Kotahi District Council and Regional Council all had to contribute and all had to have a say. It does make sense for Regional Council to run it. It's a regional issue. Like our bus runs runs from one council area to another. So one district council area to another.
Yep, from Hamilton City into Waikato District. Yep, and both of them pay for it. Because there was that discussion at the community board almost a couple of weeks ago now, when the regional council came along and presented its explanation for spending 57,000 of Waikato District Council's money on extending the buses out to Manu Bay.
Yeah.
So that's going to happen this coming Monday. So
I'm worried about that one because...
So am I.
Because the government, did you see the article in the Waikato Times about $100 million worth of transport costs having, the councils in our region didn't get it? Did you see that one?
No, I didn't.
So Hamilton City has got away about $50-something million dollars that they didn't get that they had been anticipating. Our council, $30-something million. We've got less ratepayers and more roads, so I think there's a bigger impact on us. Waipa only 1 million short, the regional council 20 million short, because the government's spending all its money on roads of national significance, and you have to say it like that, John. Yep.
Building a four-lane motorway up to Whangarei.
Well, and also...
which doesn't have a lot more traffic than our road.
Yeah. Well, we'll get it. As we know, if you build a motorway, people will use it. And then they get to the end of the motorway, and then you have traffic jams there. They're also south of Cambridge. They're also going to be doing some roads of national significance extensions down there.
Well, they're already improving that road, so it puzzles me that they need to do further improvements on it.
Well, they're doing the roundabout, not the roundabout, they're doing the junction to the Tauranga Road, State Highway 29, but they're going to soup up the whole thing either side, I think.
Yep, and they have been putting a crash barrier down the middle, which, to my mind, was sorting out the problem.
$1.9 billion they say they're spending. Some of that might be the money that's already been spent, that the last government spent, but nonetheless they're saying they're bringing $1.9 billion. But then I guess it'll make it easier to get into the Waikato, and then we'll discover the roads aren't so good once people get here. Because I'm assuming, like, if our council's lost 30-something million, it's a figure like that, I haven't got it in front of me. I mean, that's pretty substantial for our little council out of their roading budget, isn't it?
Yeah, I've yet to see it discussed on a council agenda, so maybe that's still to come. Maybe it's breaking news, which...
Well, it broke last week.
Certainly is for me.
Yeah, it broke last week. I just happened to see it in the Waikato Times, and they had interviews with the mayors from all four councils, well, it was a deputy mayor from ours, but they were all not happy, and I don't know how that's going to play out, but it's obviously severe cuts... Or no expansion, because Hamilton City's just opened their bridge to the other side of the river. Over Cobham Drive.
$90 million worth.
Yeah, and they were supposed to be having public transport put in there for the new suburbs that are going to be rapidly built there, and they probably can't afford those anymore. So less buses, John.
Yeah, well, that seems to be the way this government's going. They want us to use cars as much as possible, including telling people they've got to go to work 5 days a week rather than stay at work from home.
Yeah, so. What is that about? Is that just to be mean?
It seems to me that the cafe owners in Wellington are welcoming it, so maybe the MPs go to the cafes and hear the grumbles from the cafe owners and decide to do something about it.
They like to feel like they're doing something, so they're going to do something, and it will have positive and negative repercussions, but they're only going to focus on one of them. But one of the reasons the cafe owners in Wellington are struggling is because the government fired all the government workers. Like, how many tens of thousands of workers who are suddenly not spending money in the cafes?
Yep.
I suspect that might be the reason.
It's probably going to help the housing shortage, though, because people are moving abroad. So,
are they? Great. It's just working out. Never mind. Let's... I'm just full of sarcastic comments.
Let's carry on with the council agenda. Yeah. I also noticed that they had a report about the use of the libraries in Hamilton by people living in Waikato.
Yeah.
And apparently 3,000 people in Waikato have what they call an active membership of $90 a year. So presumably it's not just people in Raglan if it's 3,000, but... people all over the district are paying that $90 a year to join the Hamilton Library. So I wonder whether at some stage those 3,000 might get together and put pressure on the council to make it free again, rather than charge $90.
The council's not going to do that. They haven't got enough money for all sorts of stuff. Yeah. But I suppose someone made enough noise, they might get there. If Tamahiri residents, John. Actually, yep. If the Tamahiri residents decide they want something, they might. They've got the like.
I think
the
skills. They get it for free, don't they?
Probably. That would surprise.
If you're in the areas immediately around Hamilton, you get it for free.
Oh, okay.
So Fotafota gets it free, but we don't.
Oh yeah.
Because we've got a local library, so that's supposed to be the equivalent of Hamilton libraries.
Okay. That kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Well, not when you look at what Hamilton's got in the way of libraries and what we've got.
Well, it's something.
And that people from here work and shop in Hamilton as well.
But we've got the internet these days, John. I think that's probably has a bit of an impact on how desperately they thought we needed a library.
Yep.
Well, like a comprehensive library like the one in Hamilton.
It surprises me that their spending cuts aren't including libraries. But
if you look at it that way. Well, it's a bit of a community hub. There's lots of events there, especially for kids.
Yep. I'm not saying they should be cutting libraries. I'm just saying it surprises me they've not proposed it.
They haven't yet. Yeah. Yeah, it's a community hub, I think. It'll be a while before we get to that one, but eventually. Okay, what about You've got some notes from the Sustainability Committee. What have we got here? Climate Action Plan, John.
So as we're speaking here, the council's speaking over in Narawa here at a Sustainability Committee meeting. They've got a Climate Action Plan in it, which if we've got time, we might go through it page by page. I think there's some interesting points in there. Some of them I've not come across before, but maybe the highlights of it are things like running our diesel vehicles costs nearly twice the cost of running our electric vehicles, and running our hybrid vehicles costs 1.02 times more than the cost of running our electric vehicles. So hybrid and electric are pretty similar on cost, apparently, which surprises me. And they're 2% difference, if my understanding of their maths is right. And they also talk about the cost of running petrol hybrid electric vehicles 1.19 times more than EVs. So, and they're also saying that natural gas prices are going to go up 80% next month, which is news to me. I don't know whether everyone's getting that increase or
80%.
We're not actually on gas mains here, so maybe it doesn't affect us. But
80%? How is that even?
What? Well, maybe they had a very good contract before, and maybe it's now catching up with market prices.
Probably a long term one as well. So hold on. Diesel vehicles cost nearly twice the cost of EVs. Hybrid vehicles cost 1.0 times more than the cost of running our EVs. And PHEVs. What's a PHEV?
My guess is it's a... Oh, no. I don't know. I was going to say it was petrol.
But petrol hybrid EV, but we've always talked about a hybrid EV.
Maybe they're talking about diesel hybrid. Don't know. Maybe we need to get Rachel in and talk to her.
We don't know.
She was the author of this.
Look, this is the thing I come with the council, right? Council has regulatory capabilities, and it's great that they've got a more efficient vehicle fleet, but they could make a much, much bigger difference to climate change issues with the regulations that they're in charge of.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is just...
If we get around to looking at it page by page, we've got another half hour to go, so we might fit it in. But see how we go.
I mean, like I said, I don't want to criticise them for doing this, because they should be doing this, but they could do so much more, but they're too scared to.
Yep. So we can probably come back to this.
Yeah.
So they're saying that phasing out gas will be a key priority.
Will be if that 80% price rise is coming up.
But anyone who's interested, have a look at the Sustainability Committee agenda for today, and there's 23 pages of stuff on climate plans. So,
do you think anyone else out there will do that other than you, John?
There's quite a few people interested in climate issues. So
true.
There may be some people who... And it set out with all sorts of pretty pictures and diagrams and such like.
That's reassuring to know.
I don't know how much time and money they wasted on doing that.
Well, you're one of the few people who can cope with just pages of black and white text. Most people need a little bit of visual variation. You seem to be able to absorb it quite happily, but the rest of us struggle a bit.
We've talked from time to time about what's going to happen with the Three Waters, and there's a report again going to council today. Talking about exploring an arrangement with Hamilton City Council, but only looking at water supply and sewage and not at stormwater, basically reviving what they were doing in 2016 when they then suddenly decided they were going to go with WaterCare. Mm. WaterCare has ended its contract for reasons not specified, as far as I know.
They're council-owned, but they're a commercial operation, so they obviously decided it wasn't worth keeping with Waikato District when they've got 1.5 million people in Auckland to worry about. I want to talk about the Three Waters thing, John. I don't know if you picked up on this, what happened with Hamilton City. As far as I can tell, all the councils in the Waikato region were meeting together to talk about a plan for Three Waters. So I presume that includes Matamata, Piako, Waipa, Hamilton Regional, Hamilton City, Waikato, Awan, maybe more than that, I don't know. But I think they had a plan, and then I think Hamilton said, no, we don't want anything to do with that plan. We're making our own plan, and we're going to have our own, Hamilton City's going to have its own council-controlled organisation, and we'll set it up, and then you guys can join later if you want. And they said, Waikato, we realise you've got a problem because you're going to lose water care, so you can join sooner. I think that's what's happened. So I think it's a bit of a, it looks like a power grab from the outside, like Hamilton City wants to have total control. I don't know why. Maybe they don't trust the other councils. Maybe they think, well, no, in fact, there was a line in there, something about it. I can't remember what the line said, but basically because they've got the most people and they're the biggest council, they should control it. Kind of, that was my interpretation of what was said. So I haven't had a comment from anyone. I was going to interview Lisa, not last Friday, but the Friday before, and then she had to cancel the meeting because they had a sudden workshop about that issue because Hamilton City had just made its announcement. And then it was no point talking to her yesterday because our council is still working through its options. And like at that point, she said everything was on the table. So hopefully I could talk to her this Friday and find out what's going on, because this is a big spend up. This is a huge portion of our rates. Like the money we spend on the sewer system alone is more than the general rate that covers, which is the one that everyone talks about, but actually the wastewater costs more than all those other things that come under the general rate. So anyway, how much of that was news to you, John?
I didn't realise council had already had a meeting on it, because they've got a recommendation today to go and have more meetings with Hamilton to nut out how this is going to work. So I'm guessing they're going to approve that and it's going to gradually move forward, as it was back in 2016. But maybe Hamilton wasn't happy in 2016 and felt it needed to take more control of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know why. Like, I don't understand why, because at the level of the managers, like they're a little bit council agnostic. Like they all move round between, you know, the staff of the councils all move round between Hamilton City and Waikato and Waipara and Matamatapiako. Like, yeah, and it's a relatively progressive council at Hamilton at the moment, although they've got some pretty conservative people as well.
Hamilton varies between being quite progressive and being like the rest of the districts around it.
Yeah.
Whereas the districts tend to stick with their fairly middle of the road to right wing view of life.
Yeah. So at the moment, I mean, with the mayor, like she's more left wing and progressive, I would say. I don't know. I don't know what the suspicion is of the other districts in it. So I'm waiting to find out more. I don't know if anyone will want to tell me, though.
Well, certainly the report that's going to council doesn't offer much insight into that.
No.
It just says we're having negotiations and we want council to authorise carrying on with the negotiations.
Yeah, also there's the potential that they'll have to go out and put tenders out to private contractors, I suppose, so they don't actually want to give away too much.
Well, if it's a council-controlled organisation, it could be just run by in-house people.
Yeah, well, but when all options are on the table, that's still one of the options.
Yep. So, yeah, basically just a report that things are happening, but we don't actually know what.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a whole lot of stuff going on behind the scenes right now.
Which is one of the problems with councils, and indeed one of the problems with the community board, because there was a hearing last week into the continuation of a system whereby they close roads from time to time to run car races on them.
So there was a motorsports bylaw review.
Yes.
And you...
It's a more accurate title.
Yeah. And you were submitting in person.
Yes.
Okay. What can you tell us, John? What can you report?
So, and there were quite a few people saying that this is quite disruptive to rural life. You know, you have your road closed for a day or more, so you can't actually go out and go about your usual business, and they were grumbling about the amount of pollution that comes off the road in the form of dust and other pollutants. They were grumbling about the noise of it, and generally saying that, you know, in an age when council's just producing a report on climate change, maybe racing around in motor cars, which are still oil powered, maybe not the best thing towards climate change.
So it's not going to be a hybrid rally like that last one that came through, the international one?
Well, this is a general. It's possible that council could have a separate rule for hybrid or electric vehicles and petrol vehicles. So I don't know what they're going to come up with eventually. So that might be an option, but it still has the problem of closing roads for local people.
And there's a lot more people live out on those roads now than a decade or two ago.
So then maybe that's an issue. But yeah, I mean, there were submissions for and against. One of the submissions was saying one of the problems is that Hampton Downs has changed hands fairly recently, and they're charging a lot more for people to use Hampton Downs racing circuit.
Yeah.
So they're saying that's an incentive to use the public roads rather than use Hampton Downs for racing.
So I know that like a year ago or two or something like that, there was quite an organised group opposed to rallies living out there.
Uh-huh. And they're still organised enough to get quite a few people putting submissions in.
So, okay, yeah. And you spoke yourself?
Yep, so and I was saying that, well, particularly emphasising the climate change issue, because we are increasingly seeing evidence of climate change, and you know, I welcome the fact that council was doing work on it.
Yeah,
it seemed rather anomalous that they were doing that work and still allowing motor rallies to close off roads to inconvenience people.
It's like it's like celebrating ice sculptures on the Titanic, isn't it?
maybe that's one way of looking at it.
Yeah.
And then at the end there was a question, or at the end of my submission, there was a question about the economic benefits from motor racing, and I'm not aware that any work's been done on it in any sort of balanced way, looking at the pros and cons of it and how much it does disrupt agricultural and other life in the countryside, how much it costs to sort out the roads, how much it costs in the way, because when we look at road improvements, we usually look at the amount of time that you're going to save on a journey, and if you've got the road closed altogether, then you can count hours against that in that sort of sense. So I'm not sure whether a total survey has been done in that way. Chris from our community board was saying that Raglan benefits when the rally comes here, but that's looking at the businesses here in town. And I'm not sure to what extent that's offset by the other losses, and most of the car rallies around the district are not on that sort of scale anyway. They're out in the countryside rather than being based in a town.
So the one that came through last time, they centred themselves in town, and the Harbourview Hotel made a killing.
Yep.
it was definitely good for them. I was standing in the doorway to swap when it still existed, because I was trying to watch something, and I looked around at Bridie, the owner, and I said, I looked at how we were all blocking the door. I said, have you had any customers today? And she was like, pretty much no.
Yeah, I got the same reaction when I talked to some people in town as well.
Yeah. Now, it might be with swap that people will come back to get their thing the next day, and that's not a big deal. I don't know. Maybe they were desperate for stuff and they went into the bin in Hamilton and Dinsdale instead. But there's this other rally that they're talking about generally. Do some of the rallies just go out to Ruapuki and not really make an appearance in town?
Well, that's my understanding of it.
Well, they're not.
Because there aren't any shops in Ruapuki, so, and I don't know how many people stay at the bed and breakfast out there in order to take part in the rally.
But. And also, I wonder if the people in Ruapuki give a damn about the economics of Raglan businesses in town. Like, to be fair to them, why would they? They're not really. They may not feel part of this community.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see what council comes up with.
So Chris, was he representing as himself or as the community board?
Well, my understanding, he was talking for the community board, which seems a bit odd given that I don't recall the community board ever discussing this.
No, I don't either, no.
Which is maybe a reflection of the extent to which the community board's having meetings behind closed doors these days.
Well, on the other hand, though, I do see them talking about Sound Splash like all the time. Like they,
been discussed in the public meetings
often, like for extended periods. It's like the one. It's like it seems like their most important issue, judging by the amount of time they spend talking about it in meetings. And if someone's listening from the board, they might think that's a little bit unfair. That's just what it looks like. I am surprised at the amount of effort that goes into Sound Splash, and I see that as a similar issue to the rallies, and that some people really like it, and some people really don't like the problems it causes on our roads. and there's discussions about how much business it brings and things like that.
It seems to me the problem with both these things is that there's not any forum for a public discussion on it to actually hear the pros and cons on both sides, from Sandsplash or from the motor rally or from people who live in the countryside or who live near Sandsplash and get inconvenienced by it. So.
There is the Resource Management Act, which covers a lot of the stuff, and the council has to make its decisions, like its staff have to make decisions about these issues based on that. They've got very clear guidelines about that. But, I mean, if there's any forum, it is the community board. Like, the people could come and discuss things these things at the community board. And I know they have, but, So, did the community board present the idea, did Chris present the idea that the community has mixed feelings about it?
I didn't actually hear Chris's submission. I've heard from other people about it who weren't too happy with it, so... Some of that lobby group out in the Rupuki countryside thought that it was unfair.
So, which is now part of the Raglan Community Board area. I would expect the community board to be neutral about it and say, look, we've got some people who are really passionate about motorsport and some people who really don't like it.
Yeah, same. Maybe that's a question for the next community board, which is coming up in four or five weeks' time, isn't it?
Yeah. Sometime like that. Okay, yep. All right.
So maybe we've got time to go and have a look at that report that Rachel's written on climate action plan.
Yes.
So this is, a 23-page...
We'll have a break.
Okay.
So I can get my head around it, so I don't even know what it looks like.
Raglan Community Radio, 98.1, the best in the West.
Hey, got the morning show here on Raglan Community Radio. Welcome back, John.
Thank you. Sun's come out.
Almost. It's going again. But preemptive. So the Waikato District Council has a climate action plan. Is that what we're calling it?
Well, that's what they've called it.
That's what they've called it. Okay. And it has targets and objectives. John, do you want to? Are we talking about that first up?
Yeah. Well, if you go to page 113 of this document in the Sustainability Committee agenda, which is, as I say, being discussed today. Hopefully council's going to approve this document, so we'll probably see more of it. But it's got the target to reduce organisational emissions by 50% by 2030. So most targets are to reduce climate change emissions by 2050, but they've gone for a relatively ambitious one of 2030. And then they've got a whole series of things on the... Well, they've got... summarised around that on that page. So, but then they've got them page by page in the other 23 pages of this document. So, some of the things I've not come across before. Some of the things have been talked about for a long time and nothing done about them. And in that context, I'm particularly thinking about the cows up on Wainui Reserve. That it's long been suggested that it doesn't help the access to the reserve, so it restricts where you can go on the reserve, and it also is the third highest emitter in terms of carbon for the council. And in fact, they've got a graph on the next page which shows enteric fermentation cattle, after electricity, that's the highest emission that they're showing for greenhouse gas emissions.
Enteric, what does that even mean?
I think enteric. That means in the digestive system.
Okay, all right. Fair play.
We probably don't need to go into that, but yeah.
I don't want to.
So cows have four stomachs, and the four stomachs are great at producing methane.
I thought we weren't going to go into it, John.
Okay.
Go into the cow's innards. Okay, so what do you think of the target? Good target, John?
Well, it could always be more ambitious, but it's good to have a target. Cutting it by half by 2030 is pretty good. It depends whether they can achieve it, and I imagine there's going to be some discussion on whether it is achievable.
So can we look at their progress?
We've got how we are tracking so far is the next diagram, which doesn't show all that much of a reduction. They say that our emissions are on a downward trend, averaging 4% a year. I've not actually worked out what 4% compound works out, but my guess is that over the next 6 years, 4% compound isn't going to produce 50%.
They only show
how's your maths?
No, I'm not doing that in my head now. Not compound interest. It just shows they only show 2020, 22, and 23. And so we don't know what. I guess it doesn't matter what was going on before that, John. That much, I'm not sure.
Well, I think this is since council became more aware of climate change and started doing something about it, having something to do with the erosion up at Port Waikato, probably, because the council's been having major problems with roadways and such like. In fact, the front page of this plan, there's a picture of Port Waikato and half a roadway disappeared into the sea. So I think that's a driving force.
The irony is that's probably got a lot more to do with the natural cycles of sand being dug in and then replaced over the multi-decade periods. But anyway, if it's got them going, it's got them going.
Yeah, I think you're right. But then it goes on to having another brief summary of what the emissions are, how much they hope to reduce them. They hope to get rid of all those cattle on the reserve. So that's 153 tonnes of carbon dioxide a year.
So they're definitely, do you take from this report the fact that they're definitely going to do that? Because that's actually a substantial change to how Wainui Reserve is run, because the cattle eat the grass. And so they're going to have to replace, they're going to have to, well, maybe they won't, maybe they just let the grass grow.
Well, they could plant it out with trees, which would be even better, because then it would take up more carbon.
Yeah.
In some places you'd want to keep the views, but in other places there's no particular reason why it shouldn't be covered in bush, and they could get a good return just by putting honey hives up there and planting out in Manuka.
True, actually. How does that compare? Do you know how that compares to running conventional farms with stock?
Some conventional farmers reckon they get more out of honey than they get out of conventional farming.
Right.
So it depends on the price of honey, like most things, and the price of milk and all that sort of stuff. But
yeah. And it would be very easy for the council to do that. They could just contract out to some other bee people.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of beekeepers around keen to put their hives in places, so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right, there's been lots of talk over the years, well, we've talked about it over the years, about the use of that farm, and this seems like something that will actually cause a change if the council's serious about reducing its emissions, and it could make a substantial change out of that, because what did we say, it's the second biggest... So in the category of... the categories of emissions, cattle is high, but is every cow the council is in charge of, is it on that piece of land, or are there others around the district?
Well, no, that's the only place that Waikato District has cattle.
Okay.
As a council.
Yeah.
Of course, there's loads of cattle on farms all over the district, but those are the only ones actually owned by the council.
Yeah, I know. If that made a regulation banning cows throughout the district, that would make a substantial change, but that's not going
to
happen.
It's interesting to see these figures on just that 140 hectares, and then you think how much bigger the whole district is and how many cows there are across the whole district, and it's massive. But yeah, because I'm interested also to see that it says Wainui Reserve currently generates roughly $11,000 a year, presumably from the cattle they're talking about, which seems to me to be relatively low. It's not going to be all that big a hit on council's finances. Especially since they could, as I say, have alternative uses such as a native plant nursery or a market garden, which could potentially generate four times this and create local employment and collaboration. So that's one of the discussion points in there. I'm interested to see that Rachel's managed to get that in there, because many of us have tried to get it into various plans over the years and failed. So well done, Rachel.
So this is Rachel Goddard, who is the... the climate person at council, also lives in Raglan, so you know her, and that's why you're referring to her on first name terms, but just sort of better tell other people. Okay, so do you think they're going to be able to get, there was something else they said.
Well, they then go through all these things page by page, so if...
But this bit here, John.
An extra 10 minutes to go, I think.
That special little circle there, our emissions are on a downward trend, averaging 4% per annum. With the removal of the gas boiler, we expect to see a 15 to 20% decrease. So have they got a gas boiler at the council building?
Well, that's in the swimming pool at Huntley.
Okay, so they'll find another way
Well, using solar heating, yep.
To heat the water, so using solar heating. Okay. So, all right. Now, another question. Moving to electric vehicles, moving to solar heating, when they calculate the cost in terms of greenhouse gases, do they count the manufacturing cost of those cars and
solar
panels? Well,
they're counting the overall cost. So,
or the year-to-year cost, just the usage cost or the manufacturing cost?
I think, because one of the things it says is that this report's not been based on a cost-benefit analysis. So that's the next thing they're proposing to do. So I think that's Rachel's next work stream for the next year, to actually put some costs and benefits on these. Because she's talking about, you know, as I say, Wainua Reserve may be being four times more profitable. But as far as I can make out, there's not a lot of work being done on whether that's actually true or not.
What does she say about that in the report? It should be four times more profitable?
Well, she's saying that things like market gardening, using that land could be four times more profitable than using it for cattle.
Is that good land for market gardening, though?
Well, some of it probably is.
It's pretty wild. Is the soil fertile enough?
Well, most of Raglan is clay, and I think that's also clay on Wainua Reserve.
Meaning?
So, meaning it's not great soil, but people around the district do quite good market gardening. Probably you can think of a few examples around town of people who've done market gardening. There's Kai Fenua that did quite a lot out at Whale Bay. There's a couple that I can think of out along the main road.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we've got Soul Farm who are producing stuff like that, so there's quite a few around.
And we all know that the permaculture practices, you can improve the soil quite drastically. Okay, I just think it was a bit wild up there. They can and probably will turn some of that into sports fields up there, the flat bits near the car park.
Yep, that's another advantage of getting rid of the cattle. It's a bit hard to play soccer when you've got a cow running around.
The parents don't like their kids running through cow pats because there's a bit of a clean-up operation afterwards.
They also go on and have a look at various details of these. So they talk about the role of strategy and planning and list all the various plans that they've done. They look at how to reduce the amount of gas that they're using. So they mention the Huntley Aquatic Centre there, so it's what I call the swimming pool, and transition away from LPG use at our holiday parks. So that's where it comes locally to the campground at Raglan, moving away from using LPG for hot water there to using a heat pump, which they reckon is going to save a lot of LPG and cost.
Still using electricity, and electricity still has its own contribution to climate change, doesn't it?
Well, it depends whether it's hydro-generated or wind-generated or whether it comes from Huntley. So, yeah, most of our, over 8% or almost 90% of our electricity is renewable power.
Okay, all right.
We've got the advantage in this country of all that hydro dam building that was done in the last century.
Yeah.
And now, in terms of renewable energy, it puts us in a really good place. If you combine that with things like wind and solar power, then you can use the dams as batteries and keep the water in them to use when the sun isn't shining or the wind isn't blowing. Electricity is generally much cleaner than gas, because gas is methane, which is carbon and hydrogen. Carbon and hydrogen burn and produce water and carbon dioxide, and carbon dioxide is the stuff you don't want up there. They're looking at that. They're also looking at reducing the amount of electricity they use. So they're considering how they might use more energy-efficient equipment, improving air conditioners, how they might generate power on council land. There's a lot of exploring ideas in this, and consider and all that sort of word being used in this plan. So it's still in a fairly tentative stage at the moment, but at least it seems to be moving in the right direction. They also talk about the staff transport, which is where we were talking about the efficiency of cars. So that's one of the issues that they're looking at, expected emissions reduction 5%. They're also looking at what they can do with reducing the number of flights that staff take, establishing a preference for online attendance for HUI where feasible, and explore offsetting council flights, which it surprises me they're not paying the small amount which it costs to supposedly offset a flight. But maybe they're talking about doing it for real rather than for publicity for the airlines.
At some point, you can only cut transport so much before it starts to actually impact the effectiveness of council, and we're constantly complaining that the staff don't understand the community because they're not part of the community. So if they come out even less to our community, they're going to understand us even less.
If they hop on an electric bus, though, then maybe they'll get there. So, but yeah, there's
they're not going to. But the bus doesn't go from Narrowai to Raglan. If they go to Hamilton.
Well, they do talk about improving the buses and making them electric, so you never know.
But that's not direct from Narrowai to Raglan.
Again, it's one of those aspirations in this plan. There's quite a lot of aspirations rather than actual saying we will do this. But they are saying, because there's another section where they say review land use on Wainui Reserve. Rezone the reserve activity management options for transition of land use by January 2025, which is this coming January. So I'm surprised they're looking at it so quickly.
I mean, converting it, I mean, if all else fails, converting it to
market gardening or bush or something.
Bush that,
or soccer fields.
Well, I'm thinking of the bush because the cows are there to do maintenance. Right, and then they make a bit of money, and hopefully they pay for themselves, so it's free mowing. The bush is the same, and then you lease out the bush to beekeepers, and make a bit of money off it that way, and it's all low maintenance. So, I can see them going for that. It seems like a fairly easy thing to do. Just got to plant the trees. That's the only little bit.
Because as I say, we've constantly put in submissions to that effect, and constantly had them ignored. But now we're talking about January 2025 as a transition of land use, so we'll see.
But it's council land. Like, there's all sorts of stuff we could do up there. We could build houses. I've heard there's people without houses, John. Have you heard that?
Well, it's the money to pay for them, which is council's problem.
I've been sarcastic because you don't see much going on with people trying to solve the problem, government or council, who traditionally used to solve those problems.
Sustainable building is in the list, so consider climate risks for council infrastructure, including coastal inundation and flooding.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
I'm interested to see that after all the objections that council's made about having composting toilets, there's a piece in here that says public composting toilets. Again, I'm surprised Rachel's managed to get that into this plan.
They've already got them on Wainui Reserve, haven't they?
Those are sunny dunnies, aren't they? They're not composting toilets, I think.
Okay, but
they just get sucked out and put into the sewage pond.
But the objection to composting toilets is how unsavoury they are, but those things are pretty blimmin' unsavoury already, so why not convert them to composting toilets? And that seems like real low-hanging fruit in terms of achieving things. Yes, it's 2 minutes past.
Yep. There's loads of other things in here. As I say, they're looking at waste. They're looking at improving transport options. They're looking at how they measure what they're doing and how they engage and educate us. So that's maybe a major thing as well. And their report on the number of staff who are already involved. Interestingly, they say that they need to revive the climate change group which they've got on council, which suggests that maybe enthusiasm for that's waned over the years.
So the climate change group, who was that? Was that staff within council?
Well, mostly they were planning department people who got this moving in the first place. So maybe they think that they've now got a full-time or two full-time staff members working on it. So
that's almost a staff passion thing?
Yes.
Right. I mean, they don't call it that, but I'm just trying to like zero in on where the mm-hmm. where the drive came from for that. Yep. So it's from the staff themselves.
But as you point out, we've reached 3 minutes past ten, so maybe yes. we leave people to go and have a look at this. So I'll talk about it some more this evening on Raglan Talking to Raglan.
6 o'clock?
6-ish till 7:30-ish.
Yes. Can you put a link on the Whangaroa Environmental Defence page to that as well?
Yes, okay.
Yeah, and then because that's the easiest way people... Mm-hmm. I know that there isn't... The agendas are all collected together and the council website, but it's just okay. easier to go to
my next job to do.
Yeah, your Facebook page, it's just much easier. All right, John, thank you for coming in.